Welcome to Feedback Friday. I'm your host, Jordan Harbinger, and I'm here with producer Jason DeFilippo. Here on the Jordan Harbinger Show, we love having conversations with our fascinating guests. And this week, we had Barry Katz. He is one of the most iconic comedy managers around. He's discovered everyone from Dave Chappelle to Whitney Cummings, and he just... interesting stories, of course, and also had a lot of insight into not overcomplicating winning, which I thought was an interesting point. And we ran a little bonus episode on Thursday with Mary Lou Jepsen, who talks about neural imaging and how that's going to change everything. That's going to be just crazy. I still can't get over that. We're going to be able to read people's dreams and stuff like that. I can't wait. Anyway, our primary mission, of course, is to pass along these people's and our experiences and insights to you. That's the point of the show. In other words, the real purpose of this show is to have conversations directly with you. And that's what we're going to do here today on Feedback Friday. You can reach us at friday@jordanharbinger.com. And of course, we've got our Alexa skill. If you want to get little bits of the show with your breakfast in the morning, your little daily brief, you can go to jordanharbinger.com/Alexa and it will install there. So Jason, speaking of reading the dreams from Mary Lou Jepsen, does that freak you out or are you excited about that?
I am kind of on the fence with that because I know what privacy laws are, and I also know how big companies and cloud data actually protect your data. I think that basically once this becomes a thing and you put your dreams in the cloud, everybody's going to know who you are. Let your freak flag fly, and everybody's going to know what everybody's into. The problem with that is if you're into something that nobody is really into, like, oh, I don't know, kids, then you might have a problem.
Yeah.
That's where this comes into play, or murder, or I'm dreaming about killing my wife. But we also know that dreams don't actually mean anything because that's the brain's cleanup process during the evening, and it's not anything that really matters that much. So it's going to be really interesting when this stuff goes out there, because dreams in the cloud is what I'm terrified of. So to answer your question, yes, I'm actually terrified of that,
but I still want to see my own dreams, you know.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah, I want to be able to go back and I'm like, what was I going through? I want to scrub back and see that, because then you can write a really good screenplay from it.
It reminds me a little bit of James Fallon, where he finds out he's a psychopath during a brain scan. Imagine watching your own dreams. You're going to be like, oh man, I am a weird mofo, dude.
Yeah.
No,
oh God, why was I screwing a donkey? Oh God, yeah. That's just not right. That's not right.
We'll be like, so Doc, these don't really mean anything, right? They're just I heard it's the brain's cleanup process. It just doesn't mean anything, right?
It doesn't mean anything.
Right. So all that, it just means I'm watching a lot of anime, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay, just checking. Just checking. All right. What's the first thing out of the mailbag?
Wanted to know if there was any part of you that believes in fate. I realize how odd this question sounds. I ran into a nutty palm reader over a decade ago who had no idea who I was and who told me I'd be very successful one day and that I would have something to do with cars. She went on about how she never does this, blah, 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 but had to tell me. It was completely unsolicited. She proceeded to tell me, I needed you to know that you're going to be very wealthy and successful. Just count on your path. I don't know what that means. Do you know?
No, it just doesn't mean anything. This is any sort of cold read. It just means whatever the person interprets it to be. I'll get into that in a second.
It's like a low-rent fortune cookie.
Yeah,
kind of.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Of course, I was weirded out. Well, here's the thing. I don't really care about cars. And even weirder, my brother eventually went on to become a huge success in, you guessed it, cars. Like, biggest salesman in the world successful in cars. I'm not exaggerating. He's closing in on the world record again this year. My question, do you believe a version of our path is set the day we were born? Or can it be possible that one small step left instead of right can change everything? I know it sounds strange to pontificate about something like this. You guys aren't experts necessarily in this field, but I do respect your opinion. Sincerely, Mr. Fate. Debate is at stake.
Nice. I can tell you thought of that one. I am, however,
That actually wasn't mine.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
No, that one's not mine. But yeah,
I am an expert in this, namely in
we're both experts in this. Yes,
in BS. Yeah, because I went to law school and I've been doing the show for a really long time, so I am an expert in baloney. Look, this...
You have a PhD in BS.
That's right. This is fake. Anytime anyone
so
is
fake.
Giving you a cold read, it's fake. Okay, so a long time ago, I'll illustrate with an example. There was a kid who was coming to one of our events. His name is Rajesh, and he said, "Hey, Jordan, I think that this psychic thing might actually be real." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he goes, "I went to a fair at college, and they had a palm reader, and she said all these things that were true about me." And I said, "Oh, really? Okay, well, don't tell me what they are. By the way, we were talking on the live chat on our website, so I've never met this guy. All I know is his name is Rajesh, okay? That's all I knew about him. And that he was registered for one of our events. So I said, no, this is fake. And I said, don't tell me what the palm reader had told you, but I'm going to tell you the following. I said, all right, well, oh, sorry. I also knew he was a graphics designer of some kind. That's all I knew about him. Okay. So I said, yeah, well, you know, your parents are a little bit more conservative. They're from the old country. They don't really understand what you do. They don't understand what you do and why it has value. And they don't understand your urge or your need to be creative in your life and in your work. And, you know, they actually wish that you were maybe leaning towards a profession like an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer or something along those lines. Preferably, I don't know, maybe preferably engineer, but actually doctor. I feel like your mother really wishes that you were a doctor. Your mom might be a little bit more supportive than your father with what you do, but not by a whole lot. And your siblings are having similar problems, although your siblings have maybe done, if you have any, do you have siblings? Yeah, okay, you have siblings. Maybe they've done a little bit better, or maybe it's cousins that have done a little bit better and they're comparing you to them. And he goes, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And then I thought for a second he was going to say, are you psychic, Jordan? But what happened was he's an Indian dude who's a graphic designer. Of course your parents want you to be a doctor. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, but when you're in it, you don't think, oh, gee, there's some clearly readable cultural signals here. So, and yes, he has a sister. She, I don't remember what she did, but she was being compared with him a lot, or vice versa, I should say. He was being compared with her a lot. And, of course, the parents are like, your cousin's a lawyer. Your other cousin's a doctor. Why are you a graphic designer? I don't understand what you do. But of course, his mother, being his mother, was a little bit more compassionate, but not by much. And his father was really always giving him stuff about it. And he just could not believe how well I read the situation. It's not hard. If you have a little bit of cultural background, if you've got a little bit of idea about what a culture wants or what parents typically want for a kid in a certain area or of a certain ethnicity, you can do this so easily. And in fact, Jason, I don't know if you want to run this clip, but I was on Eric Bigger's podcast and also on Podcast One, and he was talking about astrology or something like that. And I was like, no, it's all fake. And there was a female co-host that he had, and we're going to include a photo in the show notes if you want to see her. But I basically gave her this cold read where I said something like, oh, you're of mixed heritage and your parents this and that. If you want to take a look at the photo, it's not 100% obvious, but it's also not exactly psychic of me to have made the guesses that I made. And I've done this with lots of people in the past. It is really easy for someone to cold read anyone else, even over the internet. So beware of these things. It's not always a scam. Some people genuinely believe they can do this because they have some kind of powers. But their only power, like the photographer at the wedding who prompted this letter, her only power is a little bit of self-delusion combined with a lack of awareness that their so-called intuition is really just is her subconscious brain putting together readily observable facts that are right in front of her eyes. And I'll also note that in the above example that you read earlier, Jason, that woman didn't get anything about the question right or correct. Not one thing. She sort of touched on something his brother did, right?
His brother, exactly. There are cars in his zeitgeist. And
right.
It's like, oh, there's a car. And how many people deal with cars? Everybody.
Well, yeah, but think about it like this. She was a photographer at a wedding. Okay, what's a wedding? A family event? Was his brother there? Was this his family? If this is his family, she just overheard a conversation, honestly, or knew something about somebody else. And if he's a world record holder in car sales, do you think maybe she knew that before she came to the wedding?
You know what? Pre-selecting the audience is one of the things that these people do.
Yeah.
I was back in the day, I got suckered into John Edwards. Do you know who he was?
One of the presidential candidate?
No, different one.
I'm just kidding.
John Edwards. John Edward had a show on Sci-Fi where he would read everybody every night. And I got suckered into this thing because I was a kid and I didn't know any better. And I'm like, holy shit, this guy can talk to the dead because he's doing all this stuff, because I didn't understand how A, editing worked.
Right.
I didn't know how pre-selection worked. I didn't know that magic was a thing. You know, there's so many things that went into this sci-fi show that made him look like he was a magician talking to the dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked to Penn on our show previously, before this show, and he talked about James Randi, who, by the way, is the master debunker of all time. So if you want to know what's going on, follow James Randi, and you can follow Michael Shermer. That will be linked in the show notes. These guys will teach you how these people do that stuff. And it's bunk. It's total bunk.
Yeah, if you ask an actual, well, a so-called, I should say actual magician, so-called mentalist, right? Somebody who performs this stuff, they, during their show, they won't tell you this, but they will tell you that this is fake. This is a skill they practiced. It's a set of trickery. There's no supernatural powers going on here. There's nothing that says your fate is predetermined. Nothing actually happened here at all. This is just a woman who either deliberately or accidentally overheard something, selected an audience, came up and told you something, and wasn't right, frankly. Was not right. She was right about your brother, either by accident or on purpose. So, and the fact that I can do this without any prep to somebody that I'm staring at should be testament to the fact that anybody who's really planning on doing this and does it for a living to scam people out of their money is going to be much better at it than me.
Go check out Penn and Teller's Bullshit Season 1, Episode 1. That will give you everything that you need to know about this field.
This episode is sponsored in part by HostGator. HostGator, if you have a weird accent. You have to have your own home on the web. It's that simple. With the ever-shifting landscape of social media, people need to be able to find you anytime, anywhere. And I know you think, oh, I have a LinkedIn profile. Well, I got social media. Yeah, until something changes or your data gets jacked or they change the config and you hate it. That's why we recommend HostGator's website builder. You can easily create a professional-looking and feature-packed website. And the best part, there is no coding. Choose from over 100 mobile-friendly templates. Your site's going to look great on any device, smartphone, tablet, desktop. HostGator also gives you a ton of add-ons, so you can do things like increase your search engine visibility without being an expert in SEO, or integrate with PayPal and allow customers to buy directly from your website. You also get 99.9% guaranteed uptime. Their support team is there to help with any issues you experience 24/7, 365. And HostGator is giving you guys and gals up to 62% off all their packages for new users. So go to HostGator.com/Jordan right now to sign up. That's HostGator.com/Jordan. This episode is also sponsored by Wine Access. Wine, something I never thought I would like at all. And then I got invited to a tasting with Wine Access. And I'll admit, I reluctantly went, but they were really adamant, and I had some friends go. My wife wanted to go. The ad agency wanted me to go. And then I had
a producer didn't go.
You were in Chicago.
Yeah, thanks. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? I'm going to not worry about it. That's what I'm going to do. but wine, I fell in love with all the stuff they were teaching us. It was really cool. I kind of get it a little more now. You know, now I can enjoy it with friends. I can enjoy it at restaurants. I never want to spend time researching what I'm supposed to be drinking. It just seemed silly. And that's what I love about Wine Access. They do all the work. I've outsourced my wine-ism. They make it so easy. You can just drink great handcrafted wines, and they get a lot of these small batch things you can't get at stores. They buy from all these small wineries. I was really impressed. I met Matt Deller, their master of wine, and this is a guy who's got kind of like a PhD / way harder than a PhD in wine.
Yeah.
There's only 45 of them at Master of Wines, and I think the whole, or 42 in the whole United States. So that was kind of a cool thing to be able to spend time with someone like that. And Wine Access has a whole team of these guys, the best tasters in the business, with access to delicious limited batch wines from all over the world. And these are wines that taste like they should cost hundreds of dollars, but they're available at Wine Access for as low as $15 a bottle. They share the full story with you, where the wine comes from, what makes it great. And I'm spreading the word because I want you to discover these fantastic wines as well. I've arranged an incredible deal for our listeners, $30 off your first purchase. But to get that, that's a couple of bottles for free, and they ship it to you. You don't have to worry about, you know, stuff getting smashed. They do it right. So to get this great offer and full details, go to wineaccess.com/Jordan. That's wineaccess.com/Jordan. All right, next up.
Just finished listening to episode 50. Woohoo! Love the future-oriented focus of the recent episodes. It was nice to hear Jason Sanderson's POV on some of the questions in episode 50. You're putting together quite the panel of different answers. I like the broadness of answers, so I'm interested to hear what all three of you have to say about this question. I've noticed lately in both professional and personal situations that person two will repeat what person one just said. If I'm person two, I know that I'm repeating either A, to share some slight nuance that they missed, or B, to share an example to agree and support their point. But if I'm person one, I get frustrated at the repetition and think that person two either A, wasn't listening to what I just said, or B, is working through what I just said out loud and is internalizing it, or C, wants to take credit for the idea I just shared. I realize both of these sound extremely biased towards my own position, which I'd like to avoid. What is your take on how to navigate these situations in conversations? Thanks, supporter or subtractor?
Interesting. So she's thinking that someone says something, the second person who says something is either trying to take credit for the idea or potentially, of course, that if she's the other person, she's just internalizing it. And this sort of is the story of everyone's life, right? We judge other people by their actions. We judge ourselves by our intentions, right? That's so common. So I totally get this. When you're person two, I would say preface your comment with, well, I agree with person one and I'd like to add X, or I agree with all but the following point, and then contrast your addition with the previous point. This way, it doesn't just sound like you're saying the same thing as the person before you, which I agree could be annoying, especially in a workplace where it's like, oh, great idea, Jim. And it's like, I just said that, right? So you want to contrast it, you want to add to it, but if you do so, you have to make sure that you point out that the person before you said it. That way, it's not just you repeating something and trying to make it sound novel. And I think this is an easily solvable problem, but you're right. It is very common. This happens all the time, especially in meetings. What do you think, Jason? I feel like this is something that happens consistently and is really easily avoidable, but most people are only thinking about themselves.
I do, and I agree with what you said. It's, you have to add something on to the comment after you say it. You know, they can say something, you can repeat it back to them, and then go into your piece on the piece. So
I'm pretty sure that's what I just said. Thanks for stealing my idea.
That's exactly what you said. So yeah, yeah. That's what I'm doing.
Damn it.
Hey man, I'm taking your advice. Come on. Don't be harsh, bro.
All right. What's next?
First of all, I love this show. It's my absolute favorite podcast and it has helped me in so many ways. I'm just finishing my junior year of high school and I've run into a repetitive problem. Throughout the school year, I form really good relationships with my teachers and we often become very close. However, if I don't have any other classes with those teachers the following year, I feel like I don't have any reason to talk to them. I understand that good rapport with my teachers is important for a lot of practical reasons such as recommendation letters and mentorship, but I also genuinely enjoy interacting with these people who have such a huge impact on my life. How do I maintain these good relationships outside of the classroom without making things awkward and while also keeping things semi-professional because they are still my authority figures? Thanks so much, Puzzled Pupil.
So this is a really good idea. Actually, Puzzled Pupil is onto something. I wish I had done more of this back in my high school or even college career for that matter.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, right? It seems like such a good idea to keep in touch with these people and yet we kind of just, all right, next, what's next? Granted, when you're that age, usually you're so excited to get done with whatever.
Get the hell out.
Yeah.
It's like, I want to leave so bad. I just want to get out of here. Yeah.
But it is good. And yeah, you can't really add the teacher to Facebook. You can't get their phone number and text them. It's super inappropriate. So what I would do.
Well, not at their age. Once right. You graduate, you can.
Yeah, of
course. One of my best friends is my photo professor from college, but I can't find my photo professor from high school. And my radio teacher from high school. Those are the two people I really want to connect with, and I can't find them anymore. And I feel bad that I didn't keep connections with them because they really built who I am. And it kind of sucks that you don't keep those connections. So definitely, I think We're going down that path where you should definitely kind of keep connections outside of the classroom.
Yeah, I like this idea Puzzled People has. So what I would do is I would pop in every other month after school and ask for advice. Just, you know, every 60 days, ask for advice on something. It's a good excuse to talk to them and keep in contact with them. And then once you leave school, then, yeah, you can probably add them on Facebook. You can use email. It's not inappropriate anymore at that point. It would definitely be inappropriate now during I don't even think they would add you. I don't even think that you'd be able to find them on there to get right. That sort of personal contact. But I would pop in every other month, ask him for advice on what should I major in when I go to college? How should I decide what school to go to? What courses should I study in my electives for my senior year? Things they'd do differently if they were your age again. Just get some general advice. Getting advice creates the Benjamin Franklin effect, which creates an affinity for you. And also is an easy, very appropriate topic. So if anyone's like, oh, what were you talking to Mr. Hart about? It's like, oh, I wanted some advice on which colleges that, you know, he thinks might be best because he's familiar with that. Or what I was talking to Ms. Antic because, you know, I wanted to see what she thought of these particular electives for my senior year. There's nothing weird about that. It's not weird to start that conversation. It's not weird for them to engage in that conversation. It's going to naturally lead to some small talk as well. And it's going to be totally fine. It's much better than, hey, I just wanted to see how you were doing. And they're like, oh, am I going to get in trouble for this? Because we get in trouble for everything because we're teachers. And, you know, am I going to hear about this from your mom? Like, you want to take that off the table, right? So
yeah,
every other month, probably not a whole lot more than that. Maybe every month, whatever. Pop in, ask for advice. You're all good. This episode is sponsored in part by Design Crowd. Crowdsourcing. It's a buzzword, but it's how busy people get stuff done in the 21st century. And thanks to Design Crowd, you can focus on running your business while handing over the reins for your company's logo, web design, t-shirt, you name it, to a pool of over 600,000 professional designers from around the world. They crowdsource the work Design Crowd does based on your specifications. You pick the design you like best. It really is that simple. So the details look a little something like this. Visit designcrowd.com/Jordan. Post a brief describing what you want from the art you need. For example, you could say, I'm looking for a book jacket design that evokes the profound sense of loss a ballerina feels when she gambles away her heirloom tutu in Vegas. Title should be in Comic Sans. Then Design Crowd invites over 600,000 designers from Sydney to San Francisco to respond. And within hours, your first designs are rolling in. 3 to 10 days later, a typical project will receive 60 to 100 or possibly even more different pieces from designers around the world. You pick the one you like, you pay the designer. And if you don't like it, Design Crowd offers a money back guarantee. Check out designcrowd.com/Jordan. That's designcrowd.com/Jordan for a special $100 VIP offer for our listeners, or simply enter the discount code Jordan when you post your project on Design Crowd. This episode is also sponsored by Policy Genius. If you have a car, you have car insurance unless you're a total scumbag. If you have a home, you have home insurance unless you're a total knucklehead. If you're alive, you should probably have life insurance. 4 out of 10 people don't have life insurance at all. It's not even their fault. It's life insurance's fault. Shopping for life insurance is confusing. It takes forever. It's super irritating. Policy Genius makes it easy. Policy Genius is the easy way to compare life insurance online. In 5 freaking minutes, you can compare quotes from the top insurers to find the best policy for you. And when you compare quotes, you save money, right? It's that simple. In fact, Policy Genius has helped over 4 million people shop for insurance and placed over $20 billion in coverage. They don't just make life insurance easy. They compare disability insurance, renter's insurance, health insurance. If you care about it, they cover it. So if you've been putting off getting life insurance, don't put it off any longer. It's never been easier to buy, and rates are at a 20-year low. I just grabbed some myself. PolicyGenius.com, the easy way to compare and buy life insurance. Oh, hey, all. This is something that is a personal favor to me and the show, and I know it's not everyone's favorite activity, but I promise it will make the show better. Help our show stay free to download with the right type of ads, with minimal ads, not this like, oh, I need 17 now because they're not of a good fit. We got a survey. It's no one's favorite thing, but responses will help align the appropriate advertisers to our audience. The survey is short. It is completely anonymous. It will take literally 4 or 5 minutes. So I would say, look, go to jordanharbinger.com/survey. jordanharbinger.com/survey. If you filled out a survey in the past, yes, thank you. We still need you to do it again. You do all of us at the Jordan Harbinger Show a huge favor by filling it out. You do all of us a favor at Podcast One by filling it out. Thank you for supporting my program, for taking the time to complete the survey. No, I didn't create it. Podcast One created it. It will make the show better. JordanHarbinger.com/survey. Please just go and do it. You can do it on your phone. It is simple enough and it makes a huge difference for us. And I really appreciate it. JordanHarbinger.com/survey. All right. What's next?
I'm writing in as a follow-up to my first time I emailed Feedback Friday on the old show. In summary, I'm Chinese, my parents are both physicians, and I'm an MD-PhD student, an aspiring professor and researcher. My now ex-boyfriend had flunked both his culinary school and bachelor's degree. Also important details, I'm 27 and he's 32. I really appreciate your candor on the show, stating it could potentially be a values mismatch. I remember this girl. Do you remember her?
Yes, I do remember her. Yeah.
Well, in the ensuing months, as I discussed with my therapist and really thought about our relationship, it became clear to me that it was indeed a values mismatch. He was spending 50% or more of his time pursuing golfing and not focusing on his career. Meanwhile, 90% of my time goes towards my career. Additionally, many times I felt that when we discussed topics, he didn't understand the time and depth required to really know a topic and adamantly debated topics with a surface-level understanding. My therapist also brought up the idea whether I felt our intelligence was matched. As a person who struggles with imposter syndrome and just believing that I'm intelligent, this was not something I thought was an issue in the beginning, especially during the honeymoon phase. Well, as time has told, it became a problem because I realized I couldn't speak to him about all the things I wanted to be able to discuss. I broke up with him recently, and he's not understanding why. Although he's accepting my breakup, what I essentially told him was that I didn't see myself marrying him because I felt our values weren't matched when it came to career and work ethic, and I felt we were on different pages. I didn't want to delay because he's told me marriage is a priority for him, and it just isn't for me right now. After the breakup, he keeps wanting to talk and insisting that he's indeed career-driven. He's been waiting to get his bachelor's degree and hasn't gotten around to it for a decade and just isn't understanding the reasons I broke up with him. How do you explain your reasons to someone who just doesn't view things the same way or can't seem to understand where I'm even coming from? Sincerely, mismatched match.
All right. Well, so unfortunately, mismatched match, you have to explain why this is over. This is not going to be a super comfortable conversation. You can spare his feelings like you have been. You don't have to say, hey, I think you're not as smart as me or something like that. You don't have to do that.
You're a dumbass. Right. Get her done.
Yeah, exactly. I would maybe leave that part out. But I would say, look, you know, we have different priorities. We have different values. This is only going to get worse in the long run. I really care about you, but this is an irreconcilable difference that I don't see getting any better. And, you know, I'm not able to wait any longer to make this happen, for this to happen. It's going to cause a lot of problems in the future. And then you have to set firm boundaries and keep them. And keeping them is the tricky part, because unfortunately, you literally, at least for a little while, you have to cut them off. There's no need to reply or indulge all of his "but why" texts that are inevitably going to come in, the emails that are like, here's this whole tirade about how you made me feel bad. You know, you're going to get that stuff. You've already explained yourself. He's not going to be convinced by you to understand, okay? He has to accept what he's being told. He's not going to come around in any other way. He's just got to accept what he's being told. In fact, actually, he already understands. He's just not accepting it because he doesn't like the outcome. There's a big difference between, I don't get why this is happening. I don't get why we're breaking up. There's a huge difference between that and refusing to accept reality, which is where it sounds like he is now. It sounds like he just doesn't want to accept it. Not that he doesn't really, I don't understand what you mean. And look, if he doesn't understand conceptually why, then maybe you're proving yourself right and maybe he isn't smart enough here because he's just going to be in denial here. I would say feel free to put your concerns in an email or a note in writing very, very clearly. And then you don't have to reply to his communication for the next couple of months. Yes, it'll be hard, but he's literally told you that he doesn't intend to leave you alone. So if you string him along at all, even unintentionally, Like, oh, well, here's what I mean by this. Here's what I mean by that. You're just going to set the process off all over again. And that's not what you want. You're not winding it down. People think they're winding it down when they reply to all this stuff. They think they're setting it down easy.
No.
Right. You're just hitting reset on the clock, the countdown clock, every single time you have contact. You're not creating.
It's like in Lost when the clock is coming down, you have to like press the button over and over again. It doesn't work that way.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't work this way. You're not setting them down easy by gradually explaining everything. You're just hitting reset on the clock and keeping the wound fresh. That's not what you want. And last but not least, and I hope it doesn't come to this, but if you so much even get a friggin' whiff of anything dangerous coming from him, like some kind of threat of violence or him hinting at that or him showing up at school or work after you've told him not to, notify the school, notify your place of employment, notify your family, notify the police. And if you're close enough to them, and I mean that in the emotional sense, notify his family as well, because you don't want to let this escalate. If he starts showing up or won't leave you alone, you got to tell everyone about this. So best of luck and let us know how it goes, because this is not an easy situation. I feel for you because you care about him, but you're going to have to set firm boundaries. And if you don't, you're going to regret it. All right, next up.
I have a daughter who graduated from a notable journalism school last year and is working a dream job in New York. She recently asked for my advice, and I'm not sure how to reply. There's a rather high-profile harassment case, both sexual and verbal, of a professor from her school. More than 20 female students and coworkers have filed complaints against the professor, and my daughter was deposed as a witness last week. She's been given the option to remain anonymous or put her name on her testimony. She told me that she was deposed because one of the primary targets of his verbal abuse was her lab partner, and she did witness his abhorrent behavior. When questioned, she confirmed a lot of aspects of the complaint, and she told me that she felt the accusations were not unfounded. She works for a nationally known TV show, and her manager told her that she ought to put her name on her testimony. My first thought was, as an honorable family, our word is our bond, and she ought to put her name on it too. But then I started to have second thoughts. Most likely, this story is going to blow up, and her name might forever be attached to it as a witness. At this point, I told her not to reply immediately since she has 2 weeks to decide. What are your thoughts? Thanks. Daddy with a dilemma.
All right. So I am a lawyer, but I'm not your lawyer. How's that to start? I would say you should get a lawyer to check this. First and foremost, get a lawyer to check this, because this is something that I'm not sure how it plays out in practice. This is something you can't really just Google because you're not really sure how this is going to go. You just need to make sure that you have a quote unquote real lawyer checking this. Jason, you mentioned something pre-show about how this had to do with TV.
Yeah. She works for a TV show, which means the producer who's saying don't be anonymous and put your name on it is going to, I mean, he's looking out for his interests, which means that, oh, hey, we've got somebody on staff who was in this story, which is going to be great for him. But long term, is that really going to be great for you? I don't think it might be.
And again, I'm a lawyer, but not your lawyer, and I'm not a litigator either. I would ask, will this affect the testimony if it's anonymous? Because I'd imagine that anonymous testimony may have less weight. However, it might also be something where you can have the credibility saying this is a lab partner, but it doesn't have your name on it. If it doesn't negatively affect this and it's not material to the case, stay anonymous, because court proceedings are public record, period.
Yeah.
And that said, if it will negatively affect the testimony in some material way, it's hard, but you probably then should put your name on it, because I feel like we all owe it to each other in a civil society to stand up for one another. That said, if there's any other hope of doing this without having your name on it, you got to stay anonymous. This is not something you want showing up in Google results for the next 10 years of your life, even though it's you doing the right thing.
I don't know. Maybe if that's where she comes from. It might be, he's like, look, I stood up for my lab partner and I stood up for the people in my class. You're doing the right thing.
Six of one, half dozen of the other.
But I think that, you know, on the safe side, be anonymous. But if you really have a dog in the game, then put your name out.
Jason, screw it. What do you say we get a real lawyer who actually knows what they're talking about on the line?
How about we call our friend Corbin Payne from Tennessee?
Good call. Yeah, Corbin Payne, friend of the show, a defense attorney working out of Knoxville, Tennessee. Corbin, can you help us out with this?
Yeah, I'd love to. So for those who aren't familiar with the law and the legal system, a deposition is something that you come in, you testify under oath, just like you're in a regular trial in a courtroom setting. However, you're not in a courtroom setting. So there's no judge, there's no jury, and there's no courtroom audience. But there are attorneys, and there's also a court reporter. So there's less of an audience, so less people looking at the witness, but it can be intense, and it is very one-on-one. I've literally seen witnesses and even parties to a lawsuit break under the pressure of a deposition. So I want to start off to say that Daddy with a Dilemma has a very brave daughter. Testifying in a deposition is not something that is easy. So congrats to her. So in reading this question over, there are three factors that kind of jumped out at me. One is the legal considerations. And the main question there is, does anonymity hurt the case? And I'm going to say, based on what he has said, probably not. And the reason I say that is the plaintiff's attorney would have made it very clear if anonymity would weaken the case. They would have probably sat down with the daughter and just said, you've got this option, but we think it would really be helpful to us if you put your real name out there, or please do put your real name out there. So the fact that they're not doing this makes me think that they're probably fine. She's probably fine as far as the case goes with remaining anonymous or putting her name on there. So from that perspective, I don't think it matters too much what her choice is. Probably the second consideration would be reputational / professional. And that's because her involvement will be a part of the public record. With the public record, this might not be something that would pop up on Google unless it's like really newsworthy and someone puts her name in an article or something. But anyone could walk over to the courtroom, request the documents related to that case, and see somewhere that the daughter had given this testimony. So it will be out there. And you cannot unring the bell, as they say, once this gets out. You can remain anonymous now and go public later, but you cannot go public about it now and become anonymous later. So any decision that the daughter makes here really needs to be well considered before she takes the leap to going public, if that's what she decides to do. And it's an unfortunate fact, but many whistleblowers face backlash for being, you know, and I'm saying in air quotes, snitches or rats. It's also a well-known fact an unfortunate fact that women who call out sexual predators in positions of power also face their own unique backlash. The Me Too movement has been empowering women all over the world to call out these predators, but time will tell whether or not it will change our culture so that those who speak out are not penalized for doing so. And the third and final factor to take into account is personal safety. So we've got a professor here who has apparently abused his power to harass the women around him. Being named could result her becoming a target of his vindictiveness. Now, she's got some very important legal protections that prevent her from being harassed by him for a testimony she gave, but it's still something that she's got to take into account. And there are some pros to these cons. One is this could conceivably help her career as a journalist because she publicly and courageously took a stand against harassment and made sure a story got out. And this is an important story. And additionally, the more people who show they are not afraid to take a stand against harassment, are not afraid to testify against this behavior, the better it is for society. I think it's very important that we all take a stand and do what we can to call this out, to rightfully demonize it, and make sure that the perpetrators don't get away with their bad behavior and they live with the fear that they could get called out and be in trouble for their bad behavior. Finally, I would also say that what she did is worthy of respect and admiration. Having this out in the public should be a matter of pride for her, not something that gets treated like this shameful secret. So in the end, my recommendations are that first, she trusts the legal team. They know it is best for the case, and it sounds like they think they'll do just fine whether she remains anonymous or whether she's named in this. I would also say realistically assess whether the benefits outweigh the costs as to career and reputation. Now, I noticed in the question submitted by Daddy with a Dilemma, her manager thinks it's a great idea for her to put her name out there. I don't know what this manager's motives are. This manager could just be making small talk, could be trying to angle for a story, or have her best interest in mind. I don't have enough information there, and I don't know if this is a man or a woman. So I would advise talking to some other women in her profession. They will have a better grasp of what this could mean for her future and be able to advise her a little bit better on this than I could. And above all, this is a pretty cool thing that she's done. I think she should try to figure out a way that she could use this whole experience to help others out. This is a pretty compelling story, and I think it could be cool if she talks about it and hopefully encourages others to do the right thing.
Corbin, thank you so much for the help, man. Really appreciate it.
Jordan, you're very welcome. I am very glad to be on here. Thank you guys for addressing this question.
All right, next up.
On Feedback Fridays, when reading the letters, is it possible to preface each letter with who is writing it? Sometimes we're halfway through or longer before we have a clue to whether it's a guy or a girl writing the letter. I'm often waiting for a clue, but because people write in the first person, they only use pronouns that designate the other people's gender. It doesn't happen all the time, but it does happen at times where I finally hear who wrote the letter at some point and have to reframe the whole conversation in my mind. Thanks. Not really gender confused.
Yeah, I think this makes sense, actually. Maybe, Jason, we start each letter with a woman from Indiana writes or something like this.
Don't say female.
I won't. I will be careful not to. But if we can start the letters like that, because I do often think, oh, yeah. So if I'm confused, I know people listening at home are sure as heck confused, too.
We will definitely do that. But I don't know if it matters all that much because these are just people problems that we're doing.
It probably doesn't matter, but I think people want to envision who's talking. In their head. Yeah.
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 They want to relate. That. They want to relate to that person as much as they can.
No, I totally get that.
All right. Keeping it short. Recommendation of the week. Jason, this one's all you.
Survivor's Guide to Prison. This was an interesting one. It came out in 2017, and it was executive produced by Susan Sarandon. And it's funny because when you go look at the reviews on Netflix, it is a huge bunch of one stars, because people apparently out there don't like Susan Sarandon and her topics. But I found it actually engaging and enlightening, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's not so much a how-to, because that's what you'd think when you start watching. It's like, okay, how do I not get raped on my first day? That's great, you know? But a lot of it is, like, I think two-thirds of the documentary is just about how our justice system in the United States is so screwed up. And, you know, it's a call to action to get your representatives to do something about it. That's really what it is. So, but I enjoyed it quite a bunch.
Yeah, it's funny how many people don't like her. Is it her voice or what? Did she do something politically that pissed everyone off?
No idea. I have a friend who's really good friends with her, and he loves her to death. So I don't know. Yeah. I really don't know what's up with it.
All right. Well, you heard it. Survivor's Guide to Prison, also on Netflix. And I hope you all enjoyed that. I want to thank everyone that wrote in this week. Don't forget, you can email us friday@jordanharbinger.com. That'll get your questions, well, in theory, answered on the air. We're happy to keep you anonymous, of course. Keep them short. That ups your chances of getting your question answered.
Short.
Yes. Yeah, concise. Short. Just enough detail to do the trick, not the whole, if I have to page down not getting on the show. Too hard. Too hard. I won't even make it through the initial read. A link to the show notes for this episode can be found at jordanharbinger.com. Don't forget our Alexa skill. How you get that is you go to jordanharbinger.com/Alexa, and it'll give you a little snippets of interviews with some practical takeaways. We're going to be putting some other drills and exercises in there as well, and it becomes a part of your daily briefing. jordanharbinger.com/Alexa, or you can search for it in your Alexa app, and it will install itself. Quick shout outs to Raina Batiski, DJ Mick's wife, who, it's funny, DJ Mick, who I asked that question about the mixtape a couple weeks back.
Yeah.
He's like, you'll never guess what happened, man. I told my wife that I was on, you know, talking to this guy, and that he's got this show, and my question's on the show. And she goes, yeah, I've been sending you that guy's podcast, The Jordan Harbinger Show, for months and months, and you just never bothered to listen to it. So turns out his wife was already a listener, and he had never heard of us. Typical husband and wife relationship somehow. Also, shout out to John Renault. He's a GM at Pizza My Heart. He listens to the show up in the Bay Area. Eventually, I will come to you for free pie. Just be ready for that. I will come to you and say, feed me. And hopefully you
We need a secret, like, you know, Jason Bourne word. It's right. Like, yeah.
The free pizza code.
Yeah.
All right. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Jordan Harbinger. It's a great way to engage with the show. Jason, where can I find you?
I'm on Instagram at JPD, Twitter at JPDef, and you can check out my other podcast, Grumpy Old Geeks. All of those are linked at jpd.me.
All right. Keep sending in those questions, those short, concise questions, to friday@jordanharbinger.com. Share the show with those you love and even those you don't. Lots more in the pipeline. We are excited to bring it to you. And in the meantime, do your best to apply what you hear on the show so you can live what you listen. And we'll see you next time.